day, radio listeners. It's time for Pure Sex Radio. This is the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real-life struggles and learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction. And get serious about purity. Your hosts are Jonathan Daugherty, director of Be Broken Ministries, and Steven Cervantes, founder of Hope Counseling Center. And now, please welcome Jonathan and Steven on Pure Sex Radio.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. I am Jonathan. I'm here with Steven. Hey, Steven, how are you?
Hey, Jonathan.
And before we start this week's broadcast, I just wanted to make mention to you of something that's very exciting here. My book is out. My book called Secrets is now, we now have that book in our possession. It's in our inventory, and it will be released later this summer to bookstores nationwide. But just wanted to let you know that we have that book now, and we wanted to make that available to you listeners as a special offer to you as a listener of this radio broadcast. We wanted to offer you the book for $10. It's normally $12.99, and you can just call into the ministry here. You can call us at 1-800-49-PURITY, or you can jump on the website at puresexradio.com, and you can go to the link that goes to our store, and you'll be able to find the book there. We are excited about this. We think it's going to be a great resource for folks who want to learn how to begin living their lives in the light of truth and not hiding any more secrets, not living in shame and in the dark. So with that done, I want to get into this broadcast. And Stephen, you've got some really exciting stuff here for us. This is actually going to be a two-part broadcast, because we've got so much information we want to cover. And this is exciting because it's really going to, I hope it will help a lot of you who have just decided to kind of step into the journey of recovery, or maybe those of you who are on the fence, it'll give you a picture of what does this roadmap look like for a person who begins the journey towards sexual purity and then finally makes it, is actually walking every single day in purity. So Stephen, why don't you tell us where we're going?
I'm excited because I had a discussion with a gentleman who gave me permission to tell his story. He is a 65-year-old married male with 2 years of sexual sobriety. And he allowed me to map out his roadmap to success. And he said, if you can use it anywhere, anytime to bless others, use it. I brought it into Jonathan, and he just perked right up, and he said, wow, this is not only his story, this is all of our stories.
And I wish y'all could see it, because we actually have it pinned to the wall here in the studio, and it's on this big, what would you call that, orange?
Neon.
Yeah, some sort of neon orange poster board. And so it's very, very cool to see, just to see it on paper, this roadmap that this guy's gone through. And when I saw it, you're right, Stephen, I just was like, man, this is so amazing, because of all the people that I've worked with that have kind of gotten to a place where now they are steadily growing, they are free, they are living consistently in purity, this is what I typically see. This is what I've typically seen in them. Obviously, the specific details of everybody's story are unique, but in terms of where we're going to go on these mile markers on the journey, this is what it looks like, and this is what you can expect if you're going to get to a place where you eventually are walking every day in freedom.
And it's exciting to look at it mapped out, because it is a success story. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when we talk, we're talking about in the trenches, warfare in the trenches, hand-to-hand, day-to-day decision, battling the culture, battling your mind, battling your past, the struggle, the upward climb. And this is the roadmap that's been mapped out, and this guy is doing great.
That's
so
good.
Mile marker number one starts with your family story. What set you in motion? And he said, my father was a very detached man. He was disengaged from our lives. And there were several children in the family. None of us got touched. He did not hug, play with, roll around and tickle. He didn't do any of that ever. Mm. And it's just like, you know, that's a dad molding his children. And then I said, what about mom? And he said, mom had been sexually abused in her past and she was wounded and dad was physically abusive towards her. And my heart sank when I heard dad's story. Then it sank again when I heard mom's story. And these are the models, the role models, the trainers for life and how to live a successful life. You watch the adults and you develop your vision, your templates based on that.
Now, many of you listening might go, hey, that wasn't my family at all. And that's okay. We're not saying that the specific details we're going to bring out about this man's life are going to match identically to yours. But one thing we can be fairly certain of is that every single one who ends up developing some sort of sexually addictive pattern has come from an imperfect family, has come from a family where the parents yes. weren't perfect. They were broken. They had their own faults. They had their own secrets. And it's out of that context in which yes. there, some seeds can be planted for some later problems.
And they would all agree their parents were detached and broken. Mm-hmm. And you could just look around and you'll see some distance, some misinformation, some quiet times where bad information floated around and wove into the young system.
So then, Stephen, out of that environment, then what conclusion typically does a young boy come to out of that sort of environment?
So this is mile marker number two. I have to develop a view of me and how I am based on the information I got. And so he decided, because of all the detachment and brokenness, that I'm a misfit. He said, I'm a nerd. I'm a reject of society. I don't know how to really engage people very well. I know how to be detached and go away and be private and be in my head a lot because I wasn't trained differently. And in the void, I learned to disengage. I found myself emotionally bankrupt and not learning the language of attachment very well.
And this is another one of the typical conclusions that a young child will come to. And when I say young child, I'm saying anywhere from, you know, age 4 all the way up to 16, 17 years old, that a child will come to. And that is, on some level, that child is going to start to think that their worth isn't that much, that they're inherently defective, that somehow in this environment, if they were different, or if the circumstances were different, they would come to a different conclusion. But the circumstances aren't different, and so therefore they come to this conclusion that says, you know what, something's wrong with me, and I'm going to have to react to this in a way that's consistent. And so how do they react? If mom and dad are broken and dysfunctional, guess what? I'm going to respond in a way that says I am significantly broken and dysfunctional. And how that all plays out in the specifics, again, everybody's story is going to be unique, but that's the typical response that this child has from an imperfect family right. dynamic. The child is going to respond in a way that says, I'm not connected. I'm not worth much.
Number three, mile marker number three, you realize that life is flat and has some sadness to it, and it's empty and even ugly at times. And you need a thrill. You need a kick. You need something to supplement and make life better. And then one day you discover porn.
And that's what this man said. You know, he realized that even in a child's mind, he was able to kind of come to the logical conclusion that, listen, a sad life is not what I'm meant for, so I've got to supplement it somehow. And like you said, man, you discover porn. He discovered porn, and that brought a sense of thrill. That's the discovery that a lot of these kids come to is porn gives me that pop, gives me that, it supplements my sad life, my feelings of worthlessness by giving me some sort of rush, giving me some sort of thrill in that moment.
Yes. And actually, mile marker 3 is my life is sad. And mile marker 4 is I discovered porn. And so let's you and I talk about it a little bit. But in mile marker 3, you find yourself detached, disengaged, doubting yourself with not much thrill in your life. And I think it's really it's hard when you're not happy and you're detached and lonely. I think it's really hard to feel very valuable.
Especially as a child. Because children are just hardwired for needing affirmation. They need and they need direction. And you know, we make a lot of assumptions as parents sometimes that our children are able to understand things they're simply not able to understand because they've never been taught or trained.
Or that they're doing well just because they're out there playing.
Yeah. They need to hear that. And so if they're not hearing that, then it really can create this overwhelming sadness and shame.
Yes.
And then like you said, along comes porn. There's this discovery that really kind of changes the whole face of their lives.
So my marker 4 is I needed something and someone introduces porn into my life. An older boy, teenager, somebody older, a cousin.
Sometimes a brother, maybe.
Your grandfather. You could find some stash that your father had. You could go out in the woods and find stuff. You could look under, you know, a bed and find stuff. In a closet, something falls down. I mean, just hundreds of stories of how you're introduced to porn. And then, as you said, Jonathan, you get this wow, whiz-bang pop from porn, and it looks like the solution to everything that wasn't working in your life.
And that then leads to the next mile marker, which is, you know,
Wait a minute. I want to say one more thing about porn, because I think it starts by somebody else introducing it.
Right.
And then there's a subtle switch that occurs. First, someone introduces it to me. And then I go looking for it.
Right.
That is a huge transition. It's one thing if you saw something and you put it away. But if you take ownership, if you weave it into you, if you develop an appetite and you decide, I'm going to go find my own.
And that's what takes you to the next mile marker, which is you're going to start experimenting. You're going to start looking for this. You're probably going to start with a little because you're not going to have much access unless what you've gotten, that, you know, whatever you can find in your house or with a couple of your friends or whatever. And so you just kind of start experimenting with this, and you're looking and you're searching and you're discovering things even about how your body responds. And a lot of times this is also the point at which masturbation and fantasy start to become part of the ritual.
You fire off those champagne chemicals in your mind.
Exactly,
Yes. And I was reading this morning where it says it is the same receptor sites used for heroin.
Mm-hmm. And cocaine.
You think about how thrilling that is, that you can, with an orgasm, move yourself from being lonely and sad and detached to this euphoria.
Right.
And tell me what kid is going to go, well, that was fun. I'm never going to do that again.
Right. And that's just it. We want to recognize that this is not an illogical conclusion that a child comes to.
Solution, right?
Yeah.
Porn is the solution to all my sadness.
And it's logical in a child's mind because they say, I'm sad. I don't have this. I'm not fulfilled. I'm not, my emotional needs are not being met in my family. And then there's this great thrilling sort of experience that's telling me a lot of things that seem to be right, seem to be happy and good. And so therefore, a child's going to latch onto that, going to gravitate towards it.
And you start with the introduction to it and the decision, and then you get better at finding porn, and you get more selective about your porn, and then you plan when you're going to look at your porn. And this is mile marker 5. My friend said, for 25 years, I got worse.
And see, that's a key there, because somewhere along the journey, usually when this person starts reaching adulthood, is when they start recognizing that I'm not embracing porn, it is strangling me.
Whoa.
There's a switch at some point in time, and everybody's point in time is different, but there's some point in time where it turns over, where it's not a relief mechanism. It's not something that you're using in response to this pain. It is now dictating. You're not controlling it. It's dictating you. And that's why he says, I got worse.
Yes.
Because it starts to control. You start to figure out ways to scheme and to hide and to be secretive and to lie and all these other things that come with it, because you want to keep this thing in the dark and you think you're in control of it. But at some point in time, it starts to ruin your life.
And we're still talking about mile marker number 5. It's the process of recognizing one day where you are and that you've gotten worse on this journey that started as a solution and comfort and now becomes a trap. And he says, I tried to quit at least 25 different times. I quit. I stopped 25 different times, but I started 26 times.
And that is the definition of getting worse. And that's really a definition of addiction. If you have attempted to stop something and you simply cannot, you keep coming back to it over and over and over again.
Yes.
Then we know two things. Number one, you're addicted, and number two, you're getting worse. Because each time you start over again, you're going to go a little bit deeper, you're going to get a little bit dirtier, so to speak. You're just going to get worse. And so that's part of that mile marker there, is you're going to spiral.
So mile marker number 6 is I got busted.
It always comes into the light eventually.
She found some stuff. And the first time I flagged her off, I said it wasn't mine. I didn't know it was there.
Excuses.
Panic, flooding, every thought racing. Get away. Don't be exposed. This is a private secret sin. And now there's some reality slipping out into the light. And so you talk her down. You back her off. You get mad. You deny it. Anything the first time just to back her off and make her go away.
And then the problem is that If you're using excuses, if you're pushing back, then guess what stays in the dark? I mean, the secret stays in the dark. And so it's just a matter of time before you what? Start up again. You do it again.
Yes.
And because we know that what's in the dark will always eventually come into light, what happened to this guy? Got busted again.
So the second time she found something, I couldn't lie as well. I couldn't talk as fast. My anger didn't push her as far back. She wasn't willing to back down. She knew something was wrong. She knew I had been distant and detached. I'd go off by myself. And so the second time I had to confess and I had to start counseling. I had to be honest with myself now that the trap, that the solution had become the trap, and the trap became too heavy for me to get out of. It now trapped me.
And this mile marker 6, this is a key one, because when it comes into the light, whether or not you got busted or you just, the weight of it just breaks you down, the key there is that can plant the seed for starting the process of change. And so while that's a painful mile marker, it's not a pleasant mile marker. It's a key one for the person who's eventually going to get to a place of real freedom. So we want to mark that. I mean, make mile marker 6, put a big circle around it, that's a big one, even though it's probably going to be one of the most painful ones, is getting busted or your secret finally coming out.
So now we're up to mile marker 7, and that's where I start to take a look at myself, and I realize that I'm a bundle of emotional hurt and shame and guilt and disappointment and anger, just a bunch of swirling emotions that are unmanageable and ugly. And I need a place to get some help to sort through this internal insanity.
This is the look in the mirror that every single guy who steps into recovery has to do. And for those who don't look in the mirror, they don't get very far down the road. If you don't look in the mirror, if you don't look in the mirror of mile marker number 7, you're going to stay at that mile marker. You're going to set up camp. You're going to have a rest stop there. Nothing's going to happen from that point. And It's looking in the mirror of who you really are, where you are really at. It's a reality check. And again, this is one of those things that's very, very painful, because you have to acknowledge the pain that you have gone through in your family. You've got to acknowledge the pain that you've caused in other people's lives. And that, when you do that, it's the realization that there's going to have to be a journey of forgiveness and a journey of seeking forgiveness that is just chaotic. It's difficult. It's painful. But these are such strategic, important mile markers that if you try to take a detour around these, you're going to get off into la-la land. You're probably going to go back to Sin City, back into your addiction, and you'll never keep going down the path toward purity.
So mile marker number eight. Mile marker number eight is just one statement. And it may be a pastor that tells you, or a counselor, or a friend. They say these terrifying words: you need to go to group. It's just panic and fear to go sit in a group of deviants, perverts, you know, liars, con artists, deceptive, minimizing men, and I'm not one of them. And just those words, you have to go to group, you need to go to group, it's time to join a group. That is a marker in itself, because it's traumatic.
Now, let me tell you right now, what Stephen has said is absolutely false about group, okay? If you think that all the only people in group are these deviant, pervert, lie, I mean, all these despicable people, you know what? When you go to group, you're looking in the mirror. So when you go to group, you're seeing guys that look like you. You're seeing guys that look just like the businessman down the street. You're seeing guys that look just like your trash collector. You're seeing real people. And this is what's been terrifying to you, is because the addiction is totally based in fantasy. And reality means, guess what? You got to live in the light. You got to bring what's in the dark out into the light. And that has been the most terrifying prospect to you, because you've wanted to try to, like when this guy said, I quit 25 times and I started 26. What he said was, what he's really saying is, I tried to quit on my own.
Yes.
I tried to do this thing alone. I tried to just kind of hide and fix this problem in secrecy. Well, that's never going to work. Purity is only going to exist. This pathway that's going toward purity, this journey, this mile marker is so huge, because without this mile marker, you will not succeed. And this mile marker, you can call it group or you can call it community, but you cannot live a life of purity without community. You can't do it alone.
That's good. So once you hear those terrifying words and let them resonate a little bit within you and settle down, then you go to mile marker number eight, and that is you attend your first meeting. You drag your body. We hear men say, I drove back and forth in front of the parking lot. I didn't want to come in. I didn't want to be here. I don't want to be here. I'm told I have to be here. Part of your being is going to resist and fight against the fact that you need to be there. But the day you bring your body into submission and you take it and you park in a group is a huge statement about your cry for help and healing. And first you resist and fight, and then you realize it's really a safe place for men to grow together.
And so don't be afraid if you're feeling that resistance. I don't know of a single guy personally who's gone to a group and the first time he ever walked into a group just felt totally at ease, like, oh, I totally want to be here. I mean, that first time they step into a group, there's a lot of fear. I remember the first time I was in a group, I was just crossing my fingers and praying that I would not be called on to say anything. And thankfully, in my first group experience, another guy shared his story before me. But you know what happened? When that guy shared his story, I just took this huge sigh of relief inside, because I was thinking, this guy's telling my story. He's saying what I've been going through. And so group, it's okay to feel that resistance at first. It's okay to feel that fear. But the trick is sit. Just sit in the group. Just sit there.
Make your body stay.
Yeah.
Right.
And what you'll find is over time, you're going to start to feel, hey, this is the right place to be. This is where I need to be. Well, for time's sake, we're going to have to wrap up there. But you know what? We've got another part to this. This is only the first half of the journey. So stick with us, because we're going to continue going down this path and showing you kind of what the second half looks like to get to a place where you can walk every single day in purity. Remember, this is the roadmap that's going to show you what a typical success story looks like. And we want to be able to plug your name at the top of that roadmap. So you can say, John, Joe, Jim, Bill, this is your roadmap too. Some of the specifics and details might be different on your roadmap, but you hit these mile markers just the same and you kept pressing forward. So we'll be back again next week with the rest of this roadmap to success on this journey to purity. We're glad you've been with us, and we'll see you here again on the Pure Sex Radio broadcast.
Today's Purity Pointer, making a point that makes a difference. Brought to you by Pure Sex Radio.
Joy awaits the faithful. The journey to purity is tough, isn't it? It requires sacrifice, honesty, humility, accountability, and just plain persistence. Your body and mind might grow tired on this journey, begging you to take a break or just indulge your lust a little. But there is good news for those who choose to remain faithful in their unrelenting pursuit of purity. Joy awaits you. Just as Jesus endured the cross, scorning its shame because of the joy that was to come as a result of his sacrifice, so too you can press on with full expectation that there is true joy in living a life of purity. Remain faithful today.
Purity Pointer is a service of Pure Sex Radio. Listen to more Purity Pointers at PureSexRadio.com.
Thanks for listening to today's broadcast. We want to hear from you. This broadcast is not possible without the prayers and financial contributions of listeners like you. Please send your notes and donations to Pure Sex Radio, 1800 Northeast Loop 410, Suite 415, San Antonio, Texas, 78217. Again, the mailing address is 1800 Northeast Loop 410, Suite 415, San Antonio, Texas, 78217. You may also reach us by phone toll-free at 1-800-49-PURITY. Our toll-free number again is 1-800-497-8748. Our website is a great resource for archived broadcasts, helpful resources, and secure donations. Simply visit www.puresexradio.com for more information. That wraps up our time together on this week's Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We look forward to having you back next time when we again tackle real-life struggles with lust, porn, and sex addiction. Until then, remember, the price you pay today for purity is a bargain compared to the pain it costs if you put it off. Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries.